Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Blur the line, break the chain, and travel to realms uncharted and all that fun stuff. I am Pam Ray, and with me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. And hello, Rex.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. Let's see here. Cold and rainy, but, you know, that's better than cold and snowing. And let's see, it's indoor and not do a whole lot kind of day. let's see, what else? Made blueberry pancakes and fried eggs for dinner. So breakfast for dinner. And how about you? Tell me about your day.
Just chilling with the mutants.
Yes. So what are your attempts at this time?
65.
Okay, that's colder than it usually is this time of year in that area, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually around 70, 72.
Okay, so not a whole lot colder, but just slightly. How about the rain? You getting some rain then, too?
No, but that's coming.
Yes. Yeah, so, But yeah, for tonight, we've got about 19 rights, which isn't a huge amount, but we can definitely work with that. And we first have a couple of carryovers from last week's break on through. And then we will go into our current topic, which I gathered a bunch of, what's the word? We don't say old, it's old-fashioned, but there's another word for it. What's another word for old-fashioned?
Aged, iconic.
Oh, man, I don't know. Well, what did I say? Take a look at the topic board in the contest. What did the contest say?
Let's see. Antique poster rights.
Antique,
vintage,
that's
posters.
It. Vintage. Ah, yes, that was it. Yes, so we have... rights inspired by a variety of vintage posters, which somewhat will be recognizable as brands that are still around today to ones that I personally had never heard of. But who knows, there might be some there that you know, Rex. And then if we... What's that?
What, antique?
Yeah, because you're an antique. All right. But yeah, yep. So lots of definitely a great lineup of poetry tonight. Then if we need them, I have four carryovers from last Twisted Tuesdays, which was a contest Naomi had ran where it was simple yet profound or something like that. And all right. Well, I see we have Lauren on hold. I will go ahead and bring him on. And, well, hello, Lauren. Sorry
well,
I didn't
good
know
evening.
You were here. Thank you for being
As
here. How's it going?
As an old freaking antique dresser drawer you call a co-host.
Well, shoot. You
better shake that rust off, young man.
It's what it is.
You are a man of exceedingly few words for being as voluble as you normally are.
Well, that remains to be seen for the rest of the evening.
You gotta have some coffee there, buddy. Coffee.
Yes, I had a cup and a burger, so I'm set to go.
That's
wide awake
good.
In charge.
Absolutely.
That does seem good. But welcome, Lauren, and I see Dark and Auras. Yes, the word I was looking for was vintage. All right, and now we'll go ahead and get this ball rolling. So what do you have for us first, Rex?
Unveiling Truth in 80s Realm by Ramakant Pandey. Indeed, said the spender, swiping the cards, charging purchases, a lifestyle on Mars, living on credit, a modern-day trend, acquiring possessions, hoping to transcend. How much we hide, how much we borrow, chasing the high of a brighter tomorrow, locked in debt, concealing the strain, covering up the financial pain. Like careful guards, we hold our debts close, managing payments and juggling the dose, afraid to show our financial plight in a world obsessed with material delight. But what will happen when we depart to the afterlife with a troubled heart? Will our debts be forgiven or linger still in a realm where money holds no thrill? The skeptic spoke on a doubtful view. Will it even matter down there anew in a world where wealth is left behind? Will our credit card living be undermined? The spender pondered with a sinking feeling, realizing a trap of endless dealing, that in the end it's not about possessions, but the moments we cherish our true expressions. So let us live within our means, avoiding the allure of credit card schemes, embracing financial responsibility, and living a life of true tranquility. For in the end, what truly counts is not the debt we accrue in large amounts, but the joy we share, the love we give, as we journey beyond our credit card-driven sieve. So let us be wise while we're alive, for in Hades' realm our debts may not survive. Our story is told without financial woes, as we rest in peace in eternal repose. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. And what a thoughtful write by Ram Kantanda. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, some people might say that this is just homespun wisdom. Don't spend more than you make. But he takes an extended and thorough look at the emotions behind our behavior. For instance, like careful guards, we hold our debt close, managing payments, juggling the dose, afraid to show our financial plight in a world obsessed with the material delight. First of all, he rhymes beautifully. Secondly, we do hold our debt close, sometimes more than anything else, because it says a lot about us, given what we're capable of and incapable of. And to go beyond our means can really be the major headache in most people's lives, other than love and sex. That's really those big fear. This is a great piece, and I like the way he does blend in Hades, because in a way we find ourselves in financial hell. Very well done. On mute there, dear.
Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I am. And thank you. Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, like Laura said, it offers up that notion of wisdom and intelligence imparted, but it also it hits on that notion of the good intentions when it first starts. Hey, you got to have a credit card. It gets pounded into you. This way your credit goes up, and all of a sudden those good intentions turn into, well, there's this going on, and that going on. I got to take care of this. And before you know it, you've swiped yourself into an arena that is never forgiven. Because when the bill comes due, but when the points go up, so does the interest rate on those cards. So you end up being a slave to the money market in repayment, because all you can afford to do is actually pay out the interest on what you owe. And you never get out from under. And that's always a rotten place to be. And when it comes down to what's held when you die, most often that gets passed on down to your family. They hound them until they pay, which is also a bad thing in part.
I owe my soul to the company's store.
Yep.
Great comments, both of you. Thank you. Yeah, this is great. As you were saying, Lauren, definitely great rhyme. You know, I like that he takes a familiar message and, you know, gives it to us in ways that are, just relatable, and I really like the skeptic spoke with a doubtful view. Will it even matter down there anew in a world where wealth is left behind? Will our credit card living be undermined? I like this almost conversational tone and this idea of what is going to really matter once we pass on to the next life. You know, on one hand, you can't take it with you, and building up debt, well, that just leaves that behind for your family. So definitely food for thought and very well done. And all right, Rex, what do we have next?
Will They Care to Hear by Jody Nelson. And why don't you read that for us, please?
All right. Will They Care to Hear? Tell the rest down in Hades of all the love we shared, the memories that we made, and of the fantasies dreamt in the field of which we laid. We'll speak of days when we were young, of laughter, joy, and carefree fun, friendships that we cherished, lost, and of the loves that we had, karmic debts paid any cost. We'll speak of how we faced our fears, and how we overcame the tears, of all the times we stood up tall, never let life make us fall. We'll speak of how we lived our lives with open hearts and open minds, a sweetness to the taste from the grapes of an ever-flowing vine, all the moments clinched in our hold, and all the people instrumental in us growing old. And when we reach the gates of Hades, we'll tell our stories to the shades, for even in the afterlife, our memories will never fade. We'll tell the rest down in Hades of all the lessons we have learned and how in life we did our best, left love, returned. End poem.
Great read there, Lawrence. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm a little conflicted. Because the office up, will they care to hear? Yes. You've got the story unfolding, all the love shared, memories made, fantasy dreamt, the laughter, joy, careless fun, friendships, everything that you're supposed to cherish in life, yet you're down in Hades. So is that kind of a nasty twist on you made one big mistake and now you're doomed down here to tell your stories as they fall on deaf ears, which is, that's one hell of a, an all-consuming thought to the ever-living in the bottom end of things, with your words falling on deaf ears as a punishment.
I like that thought, that, yeah, the conflict of, you know, emotions and the idea of going down to Hades and realizing that nobody down there is going to care. But, yeah, it is definitely interesting. I do wonder, though, because it wasn't Hades actually – was Hades actually technically hell in Greek mythology, or was it where all dead people who died went?
Good point. Very
yeah, I hadn't considered that angle.
Yeah, because it might make a difference then in how we view the poem. Yeah, I like that.
Well, the author doesn't.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't
go ahead.
The author doesn't make any distinction between having an L in here. We go right to Hades because he calls it Hades. I do think that he's coming from the point of view that Hades is simply the afterlife. And look, he enumerates a life well lived. There was laughter, there was joy, there was fun, there were friendships cherished. Karmic debts were paid. We faced our fears. We overcame the tears. We stood up tall. Never let life make us fall. We lived our lives with open hearts and open minds. These are not, this is not a life that ended up in hell. So I think that for the sake of a poetic device and the imagery that it provided, Hades is simply that other place. And regardless of the people who rest there, who remain there, or perhaps in transition, it's not going to matter. In a way, they have their stories as well, personal stories. No, I think it's a great piece. Will they care to hear? Beautifully done.
Yeah, you're right. Hades being the god of the dead, so it relative to the burial and on that angle. So you're right on that. Hadn't considered that angle since Hades is always referenced elsewise.
Yeah, but it is, both of you are right. It's definitely a great write. And I like the flow of the language choice. And I like how, you know, it gives this message of, you know, the good that we do in this life. You know, that to the acknowledgement that, you know, you are not going to be perfect, but we can do our best. You know, we'll tell the rest down in Hades of all the lessons we have learned and how in life we did our best, lest love returned. And, you know, I like that thought there at the end. And then friendships that we cherish lost and of the love that we had karmic debts paid at any cost. We'll speak of how we faced our fears and how we overcame the tears. It's a poem of human triumph throughout life. So wonderful write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Skating on Ice by Betty Page. That one's good.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Swirling round on ice, mystical, magical shows. Pretty swans twirling, shimmering costumes, millions of diamonds sparkle, create rings on blue, soothing melodies, enchanted crowds in silence, serene theater, winter wonderland, sweet candy lands, fairy tales, romantic daydreams, spinning to music, leaping, jumping, rhythmically, colorful bright lights, neon rainbow stars, glamorous nostalgia, illuminating, enticing divine, images captured in time, radiant so bold, Moulin Rouge circus, wild freak show on absinthe, girls on pretty swings, doll-like atmosphere, looks like a nutcracker scene in my surreal dreams, and poem. And Laurent, your thoughts.
I knew you were going to do that to me. I just got done with my last comment. Give me a sec to read this. Come right back to me.
Sure, no problem. All right, Rex, your thoughts.
I got a bunch. Well, the initial thought, Skating on Ice, had me thinking of Jeff Rotel, Skating Away, Skating Away, Skating Away on the Thin Ice of a New Day. So that rolls in nicely there. When she hits with the what was that? Winter Wonderland, so Sweet Candyland, Fairy Tales, Romantic Daydreams, has me thinking of that big outdoor ice rink in New York, and the idea of neon rainbow stars, glamorous nostalgia, illuminating, kind of like a laser show. Entrancing that. And also with that Winter Wonderland, there's the sort of icecapades. And now the back end was something a little different. The Moulin Rouge circus, wild freak show and absinthe, girls on pretty swings, doll-like atmosphere, looks like a nutcracker scene in my surreal dreams. I think that surreal dream came with a little bit of LSD. Is it more from one stage into another?
Yeah, I think so too, definitely. I do think that absence helped with those surreal dreams. But yeah, there is this progression, as you were mentioning, of it almost starts out more innocent-like in the beginning, and then it gradually takes more and more of a wicked turn. So, great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, Betty Page has always got something a little extra on her poems. The moment I heard, or rather read the first stanza, I innocently had in my head a snow globe, and there's one that I've seen that has this little skater going round and round on the ice. And for some reason, I thought of that. And then as we got into it, really, the language is not dark at any point. I mean, sweet Candyland, fairy tales, romantic daydreams, spinning to music, neon rainbow stars, and then all of a sudden, right out of the blue, as you mentioned earlier, Rex, wild freak show and absinthe. Now, that's a pretty strong statement, and it departs entirely, I think, from the rest of the piece. And now, perhaps enticing divine, it might be an implication of something, because it is all of a sudden spiritual, as opposed to commercial, the neon rainbows, glamorous nostalgia, etc. And Moulin Rouge Circus, I guess it can be pretty wild, but still, wild freak show and absinthe, yeah, all it does is need LSD, but absinthe is that strong and that deadly to some people. I mean, it's not a great drink. The surreal dreams is kind of offset by the doll-like atmosphere. It looks like a nutcracker scene. We've all seen the cartoon, the movies on TV. There's nothing particularly dark about that. So really, wild freak show and absinthe and surreal dreams somehow give it just that little edge that changed the poem for me entirely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely. That ending does have the edge to it. I love the way she takes us through so much beautiful and powerful imagery in her 5-7-5 lines. It's definitely captivating. I particularly like spinning to music, leaping, jumping rhythmically, colorful, bright light, neon rainbow stars, glamorous nostalgia, illuminating. You know, those lines there that really make me think of the idea of watching a show on ice, you know, and then the rest of it kind of makes me think of the after party or something like that. But yeah, for sure. But great right there, and very well done, Betty. All right, Rex, what do you have for us next?
Taking control of this bizarre circus of a life by Jenny the Deep, and you got a SoundCloud.
All right, here we go.
Taking control of this bizarre circus life. Welcome to my circus, skating on life's tightrope. Pull up a chair while I pour some tea for two. Keeping my cheeks dry today, this kitty will cope. But let us discuss the elephant in the room. Pedaling through this monotonous life, picking up my outer fabric, sewing up the pieces, stitching myself back together, I'll be all right. I can't afford to fall apart, won't show my creases, discovering that we have nothing to say, off balance now, not liking what is being told. Torn apart, we end up going our separate ways. Like poker, we must know when it is time to fold. Hold on tight to me as we ride through life's circus. It's how you act in it that is the true talent. No one quite understands or knows its purpose. Like of mice and men, try to be brave and gallant. Already suckered in, lost in her eyes. It's too late for me. Life is sucked out of me, as she insisted. Avoid the black widows in disguise, for with just one bite, she will have you convinced. Her camouflage, tempting poisonous apple, fooled this trapezist, laying there, deceivingly, salaciously, on the gold, sleek floor. staying away from the tramps and thieves is wisest. Take control of life, walking out of its unstable, bizarre door. End poem.
Great read and write there, Jenny. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And I can hear her practicing her guitar that she happened to mention on Headliners last night, that she's got herself a guitar and she's learning to play some chords. And pretty soon we're going to hear more and more of her guitar playing in the background of her readings. So I'm looking forward to that. Pretty exciting. And yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It's another great poem with the imagery that's strong. I like that she was inspired by multiple prompts, and uses the circus prompts as the main focus and the idea of how crazy life can be. I really like discovering that we have nothing to say, off balance now, not liking what is being told. Torn apart, we end up going our separate ways like poker. We must know when it's time to fold. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, I get Kenny Rogers, the gambler, in my head as soon as I read those lines.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Of course, I also write like the one found that hold on tight to me as we ride through life's circus. You know, life is crazy. It is a circus. You know, you need somebody to stand by you. I also like the line that mentions of mice and men, like of mice and men, which is such a great book by John Steinbeck, but is also, a reference to a poem from Robert Burns, and I won't say it in the original format, but basically the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And so I thought that was a particularly clever reference on her part. So great write about life and all its ups and downs, and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I got to agree with you. A life being a circus, if you've ever been under the big top, big three rings, all the outer amusements, games of chance, etc., what a zoo. And drawing the analogy to life is really rather opportune, appropriate. And despite all of that, she calls it Jenny calls it a monotonous life, which she has to stitch back together because everything's fallen apart. A love has been lost, already suckered in, lost in her eyes. It's too late for me. Life is sucked out of me, as she insisted. Avoid the black widows in disguise, for with just one bite, she will have you convinced. You know, it goes from being somewhat accusatory, self-revelatory, even a little self-deprecating. As you approach the end stanzas, that last one just sneaks right up on you. All of a sudden, the tone just changes entirely, laying there deceivingly, salaciously on the gold sleek floor. I mean, she changes the tone. The tone has changed, rather, in such a way as to be an excellent, excellent ending and a great piece, great poem. Hey there, dear. Unmute.
Oh, duh. Okay. Geez, I keep doing that. I compliment your comment, then I say your thoughts, Rex.
And you hear that?
So, great comment there, Laurent. And your thoughts, Rex.
That opening start. Welcome to my circus. Skating on life's tightrope. Pull up a chair while I pour some tea for two. Had me thinking of Tightrope by Leon Russell. I'm up on the tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. And that finishing the note about let's talk about the elephant in the room. Also kind of referenced that song as well. Was it like a rubberneck giraffe? You're looking through my past. Well, maybe you're just too blind to see. So I like the role going on with that. And the first four stanzas hints at that notion of doing well with everything that's going on. And all of a sudden, as an operator, the last two stanzas walk a different line. It's that moral tale. This is how you should roll through life. And then at the back end, he offers up his tale. Already sucked it in, lost in her eyes. It's too late for me. Life is sucked out of me, as she insisted. Avoid the black goodness in disguise. With just one bite, she will have you convinced. And that is the fall, because he offers up that note with the apple fool, this trapezius. So walk that that tightrope line very carefully and ponder the decisions you make, because you'll end up falling just like me. And I like the angle that she took with bizarre instead of bizarre. Bizarre, like I said, it offers up that note with the circus, but bizarre is also that hectic place where all manner of things are going on at once, and if you don't pay attention, you get lost in the commotion going on.
That is a really great observation there about those different aspects of the poem and the wordplay. Very cool. All right. What do we got next, Rex?
We've got Another Kodak Moments Passed Me by Mystic Muse. Another Kodak moments passed me by. I'd gone and left my camera in the car. The sunset looks amazing in the sky, and I can even see the evening star. The ocean crests are waving pearly whites. The gulls are ballerinas in the air. But there will be no photographs tonight. My car's a mile away. It isn't fair. The crabs march in formation on the sand. The sights I've seen have been superb so far. But here I stand, no Kodak in my hand. I left my friggin' camera in the car. End poem.
Oh, man. I think for many people, this is definitely a relatable write. And I think we've all been in that moment where we wish our camera wasn't so far away. Though nowadays they have cell phones with cameras, but it's not necessarily always the same. But I'll comment further, but first I'll get your guys' thoughts. So, Lauren, your thoughts.
Well, I love the poster, the image. It's true period art, and I'm a huge fan of poster art. This might give some clue either as to the age of the poet or the poet's ability to take a poster like this and adapt a poem to it, because absolutely, everybody's got the phone, everybody's got the ability to take the picture, but for the purpose of the prop, the purpose of the picture, this is really beautifully done because it is, as you said, so relatable. Excellent piece.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I do too. The poster art, I mean, I really had to hold back on how many prompts I used because I was, you know, searching online. I came up with the idea for the contest. I was searching online, and there was so many. I just wanted to keep grabbing, you know, so I think this is definitely a topic for inspiration that I might visit again, even if it's just for the fun of it.
Do a series.
But, oh, there you go. There you go. That could make it fun. Yeah, I like that thought. Very cool. And great comment. And Rex, your thoughts.
Oh, it paints a well-done picture of the poster itself, but it also paints that notion that back in the day, nothing beat a Kodak moment when you take the picture of what you're into, whether it's at the beach, the mountains, or anywhere else. Kodak was the place that was the film to use, because it meant everything as a memento, a keepsake. And the thought of offering up that note with leaving one's camera in the car and missing out on all that's occurring in front of you is that note for being a damn move, for being so stupid, because the car is a mile away. So you kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if you go and get it, then you miss what's happening now. But if you do go and get it, you get to catch what's later.
Can I add something?
That is
yeah.
So true. Yeah.
I live very close to Rochester, New York. That was the home of Kodak. It was a city unto itself. And many a time I've had to drive through that sprawling industrial complex, which today, unfortunately, is large portions of which are deserted, other parts of which are being used for things other than the original purpose intended, but, you know, as renting out of space, et cetera. Kind of sad, you know, because we had Xerox as well. Two giants gone.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that with Kodak is I prefer film because it forces you to concentrate on the picture you want instead of having a digital camera take the perfect picture for you no matter how you screw it up.
Amen.
That is so true. There are definite benefits to digital cameras, but it is true that as an art form,
cameras
have more value.
There are some photographers who only will use the old cameras because of the effects produced by them.
Right.
Yes.
Right, exactly. And it was just so much fun to anticipate the pictures being developed, you know?
I've had my dark room. You watch that picture swim into focus. It's a magic thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, had a dark room. Once three out of her four daughters were moved out and grown up, she changed one of her bathrooms into a dark room.
Cool.
So, yeah, yeah. Yep, but, definitely, I can. It is nice to have the convenience if you need to snap a quick shot of something. As far as digital goes, I won't say that I'm completely opposed to digital. It has its place, but I definitely agree with what you guys are saying.
Anyone
remember
the photo kiosks?
Oh, my gosh,
yeah,
yes.
The little booths in each shopping mall.
Absolutely.
1 hour photo.
I didn't work at one of those. I worked in a grocery store. I worked in the area of the grocery store that developed film, but we also rented out movies. So we were like film developing and movie renting. And I can't remember what else we did, But this is a wonderful poem. As always, Dave has great rhyme and flow. He always connects well with the prompt that he chooses. You know, I really like this all the way through. But I think it's that last stanza that really grabs my attention. The Crabs March in formation on the sand, the sights I've seen have been superb so far, but here I stand, no Kodak in my hand. I left my friggin' camera in the car. You know, wonderful lines and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
We have A Day at the Races by Daniel Duhaime. And Rob, that's for you.
All right. A Day at the Races. Smoke billows from the mechanical beast as its heart comes to life like a lion's roar. While a line of machines are at the ready to do battle in a contest of skill and agility, kicking up sand in its wake like a tornado of dust falling back to earth. Spectators roar with excitement as man becomes one with a machine, fused together by a morbid transformation. Around the track they speed, as if the devil himself was chasing them in an uncontrollable fury. Food vendors ply their wares, selling Cracker Jacks and Coca-Cola and hot dogs. In the evening, the winners parade around, showcasing trophies won in many events. End poem.
Great read there, Lawrence. Man, recently I keep running into poems that make me think about, you know, things that I would like to do in my life. You know, and the other night we had a poem about whale watching, and I was like, I want to go watch whales. And now we have a poem about racing, and I know it's about motorcycle racing, but it makes me think about horse racing. And, I want to go to a horse track and wear a big hat and a fancy dress and sip on mint juleps. But any kind of race is fun to watch. Here we have, what are the cars that, you know, like, they're basically like junkers and you can get bang them up as you're racing? Yes, there's a nearby town that once a year one of their events is to do a demolition derby. But I really did like how he captures the excitement. You know, these short and impactful stanzas, only three lines each. He captures the excitement of the moment. Spectators roar with excitement as man becomes one with the machine, fused together by a morbid transformation. Around a track they speed as if the devil himself was chasing them in an uncontrollable fury. There's kind of a darkness to that, those lines that give it almost like a sci-fi feel, but a lot of it to me really just captures the intensity and the excitement of a day at the races. So, excellent, right? And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, a day at the races, right? There's that Queen reference right at the top. But this, it kind of hints at two things. You could go with a midget racing with the one angle, but I think this with the line of, while a line of machines are at the ready to battle and the constant skill and machine, of agility, and that sort of where as man becomes one with the machine, fused together by a morbid transformation. I'm going to go with motorcycle dirt track racing, because that's what this kind of imparts, and the idea of showcasing trophies won in many events, the idea of short lap racing, and you get the idea of going up in levels from maybe a 10 lap race to a 20, 25, and so on, where the crowd is there all day long. The idea of the food vendors is right for the time, because you have these little push carts. Because this kind of sinks back to a little earlier, some 40s, 50s, maybe the early days. And there is also another thought with the thought of the morbid transformation. I could see this. There used to be a little racing game for kids that they had as a bigger, larger unit with the metal guys and machines on the track running around. And people would bet and have fun picking on who was going to win that particular race as it rolled around electrically.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember seeing that before. But, yeah, the poster is actually of a advertisement for motorcycle races. And I went to go look at it. I'm looking at it right now, hoping that it would have a year on it, but it doesn't. It just says, thrills, spills, motorcycle races, Renoka Fairgrounds, Labor Day, 2 p.m., Goodyear Tires. So, but great observations there, Rex. And Lawrence, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, actually, a day of the races reminded me of My Fair Lady and then the horse racing and that. But, of course, this is motorcycle races, racing. I think that's a safe assumption that you made, Rex. I'm a little fascinated because I've read a number of things about Daniel Duane, and he's a good poet. He's very conversant with English language. And there is such a thing as purposeful misspellings for reasons. And I'm just absolutely fascinated by that possibility in this. because it only makes one misspelling in the second stanza. But as you proceed into it, they become more and more numerous until at the end, you know, there's a bunch all at once. And is the poet implying a certain fatigue after a long day at the races and maybe a beer or two on the side, and all of a sudden anyone telling the story is hit by fatigue and it just becomes a little absent-minded and forgets a few things. If that's what he was trying to do, well, then good for him, because I found it fascinating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment. Yeah, I love My Fair Lady. It's honestly one of my all-time favorite movies. And that part where she shouts out at the races is such an iconic scene.
Come on, dope, and move your blooming house.
Exactly. Oh, man. Yep, great stuff. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Hypocrite by Time Fellow. That one's yours.
All right. Hypocrites by Time Teller. Abracantini. Try it if you won't regret it. You'll get strong and erect. It will give you the strength to bash and abuse your lover. Beat your children, abuse them. It will depress you, make you suicidal, and you'll kill everybody's wife and kids. Yes, Abracanti, take your woman anyway. You choose like the advert suggests. You're the one in charge. Like all alcohol and all drug deals, you are responsible for so much devastation and negativity in this world. Alcoholism is a fine disease indeed, encouraged all the time by fancy people and their judgmental view of others. The little girl was shot on her doorstep by the armed dealer, and they clamor to blame all drug takers for her death grew louder, and the clamor to blame all drug takers for her death grew louder and louder. The walls of hypocrisy grew, and suburbia encased itself in morality that decayed over time into a mix of oil and water. The gin and tonic drinkers looked down their nose at the dope users, yet only the week before someone was killed by a drunk driver. And when they went through the windscreen of the oncoming car, they screamed, "I blame all drug dealers and users, including those that sell and buy alcohol," end poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I'm not familiar with Abracantini. I'm assuming it's some kind of an alcohol. The opening lines are they're powerful. They are filled with irony and sarcasm. Take your woman any way you choose, like the advert suggests, you're the one in charge, is a real spike in the eye against the way advertisers illustrate the baser instincts in people with their product. And really it's an indictment against alcohol, which is in this poem treated as a drug and should be condemned like all drugs that kill people. It's very emotive. I wonder if this doesn't come from a place of some personal experience at some level, perhaps not intimately, but there's an anger contained in those words that is tough to fake. A very moving piece.
It really is. It is a moving piece, and it does almost seem to come from a personal place. So great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
I, too, I don't know what Abracantini, and I looked it up, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I might have to ask TT about that one. see what he can see what they've got. Yeah, this does hit on that note of passing the buck between the two, and it is all about, you know what, with the alcohol, you should be mindful of what you do while you're doing it, but with the drugs too, hey, there's too much crap out there, and if you don't know what you're buying from, who you're buying from, you're probably going to end up with something that's not quite what you want in the first place. So either one, a lot of people end up being at that sentence, which is, sure, as she hits on this, gin and tonic drinkers looking down and notice that the dope user, yet only the week before, someone was killed by a drunk driver. And when they went through the windscreen of the oncoming car, they screamed, "I blame all drug dealers and users, including those that sell and buy alcohol." That's a hell of a finish.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, great observations there. I was looking up the same thing, and, I'm thinking it's actually a made-up word. Because I think he put two ideas together, because there is actually a website called Herblecon that sells luxury products, for people who are good and rich. And, of course, the teeny would be like a martini. So I could be wrong because I couldn't find the word itself as a whole. But I think he kind of combined those two ideas, an item of luxury and, a martini. But anyways, great observations there, Rex. I really liked the bite in this one. It definitely didn't hold back as far as pulling the punches. I remember reading an article years ago about how there was an increase, and I think by years ago, I mean like 20 or more, there was an increase in alcoholism that involved wine, because a lot of it had to do with the fact that people who drank wine didn't necessarily see it as a problem. They didn't view it as the same as, people who drank too much beer or people who drank, too much hard liquor. But definitely a great write on the idea of, as the title says, hypocrites and those who will pass judgment on other people while at the same time the suffering that comes from their own addictions I definitely, it's a horrible thing how many people actually die by the hands of a drunk driver. And, as much as I enjoy a good beer, I do fully 100% believe that there should not be, drinking and driving, but sadly it happens. I unfortunately live in the state in the United States that has the highest amount of drunk driving, and great write by Time Teller, and very well done. And what do we got next?
Would that be Wisconsin being a ZZ Top moment? Beer drinkers and hellraisers.
Yep, pretty much. The one county I used to live in actually had the county was the highest in Wisconsin for drunk driving and incest. Which is just a horrible thing to be known for, but But trust me, there are good things about Wisconsin. I should mention that. You know, like if you need snow, we have snow.
Okay.
And and cheese curds. We have cheese curds.
Cheese heads, you mean?
That's right. And cheese hats. Can't get better than that.
Cheese hats at the game, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, got some crazy stuff. But, all right, Rex, what do we have next?
The Picture of Life by Darkened Auras. It's doomsday. Today's the day I'm off to meet my maker. For three seasons, I've been floating around in my fleshy pod, growing at a rapid rate and dreaming the time away. But today, something shifted in the mothership, and I was sucked into a tube. Claustrophobia sets in as I'm pushed, nearly squished, through a pipeline far too small for me to fit. Hours have passed at the speed of snot, but I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Phaser set to light speed, and I'm free. It's freezing cold in here and bright as the sun. So many muffled voices and blurry movements. This place is scary. I'm going to cry. Suddenly, I'm in a warm embrace. Hello, baby. I'm your mama, replies a soothing voice. I think I've met my maker, and I love her. This could be a Kodak moment. And poem.
Great read there, Rex, and a wonderful write by Darkened Auras. You know, I like that she turns it on its head, you know, like just wonderful. It's such a beautiful and precious moment to greet a child into the world that's you know, loved and, you know, just I really like, though, how she starts it out in such a way as to be this almost like sci-fi horror, you know. Doomsday. Today is the day I'm off to meet my maker. For three seasons, I've been floating around in my fleshy pod. And of course, she doesn't give you little bits of clues, like, you know, floating around in a fleshy pod. You know, really great exploration of playing with words and imagery. Claustrophobia sets in as I'm pushed, nearly squished through a pipeline far too small for me to fit. Of course the ending just had me going, aw, and definitely a Kodak moment. Suddenly I'm in a warm embrace. Hello, baby, I'm your mama, replies a soothing voice. I think I've met my maker and I love her. And I like that this speaks on that end part there speaks on the idea of the connection between a mother and her child. But also the idea of a feminine goddess. And so wonderful write and very well done. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
Well, this poem was actually written by two poets. The first one is, of course, Darkened Auras. The second one was Woody Allen, who has experience at relating a story as a sperm, which is exactly the way this poem begins. I was quite taken by call it dark humor if you want to, but it is a very, very tongue-in-cheek way of greeting the reader. But then, of course, it did soften up and become somewhat soothing and touching at the end. But still, when you begin, hours have passed at the speed of snot. You're still not taking the moment completely seriously. You're still having a bit of fun, especially with phasers set to light speed in a free. I was moved by I Think I Met My Maker, and I love her, but still, there's a lot of humor in that as well. It's a great piece.
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah. And I'm glad you point out that part with phasers set to light speed. That was particularly clever. So great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with it a lot, but I took this as a Star Trek. You look at that, today's the day I'm off to meet my maker. Kind of hints at that note from with Klingon. Today is a good day to die. And then it shifts a little bit. I like that thought with the mothership. A nice little alien moment. And then I found that all pretty funny. Plus, the hours have passed at the speed of smart is really funny. But I see light at the end of the tunnel. Phaser set the light speed, and I'm free. Again, a little Star Trek punning. But from there on down, it was a night. It was, as you finished out with it, this could be a Kodak moment.
Right. It's it kind of reminds me of the episode of Friends where Chandler and Monica had their twins, and the Chandler was like, "Oh, it's a beautiful baby," and a whole bunch of other stuff I'm going to pretend not to see. And great comments. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Plus Rat Cackers or Cackers by Laurent Yvon.
Oh, okay. Hang on, I'm unprepared, goddammit. Sorry. Yeah, I have to change the title on this. I just have to change the title because it was a little bit rude otherwise. Plus Rat Cackers. Bivouac at a red light. Sheen of headlights glow orange-red like rat eyes, bat eyes, unblinking in the damp of a twilight fog. Man walking his dog fails to curb his hound. Tail wag is innocent. Glance away is not honor-bound. Sidewalk becomes a minefield in the treacherous light. Don't run for your health in expensive sneakers. What a sight. It's a violation of the first innocence, like being robbed. That crisp new is tainted. Can we clean every nook and cranny of the night soil we step in? And we step in it plenty. Barefoot is worse. Gift of a vengeful cat, rough on rats, finicky and perverse. They both know where your slippers sleep. Like the tax collector who awaits your lies, entering, announcing himself in your domicile, royalty requiring its due for the upkeep. Be not late with a tithe, else you've stepped in it deep. Extrication. Light turns to green, permission to travel. Sun burns the fog, dew dries, shit hardens to be swept away. Ain't no green grass in a hard town, despite all the fertilizer left behind. Growing idle crap without a function. Street cleaner dreams of working at McDonald's. Would rather deal with that shit than this at a higher rate of pay. If he could sing and play the guitar, he would unionize, reject the fries, and ride in style in a machine that eats the garbage. No doubt made in China. That's a whole nother song. Light changes again, and he crosses on the red, limping from a combat wound that somehow escaped compensation of a grateful nation. More rat shit. End poem.
Great read and write, Laurent. I'm so glad you were inspired. And what a great biting social commentary on all the shit that happens in this world from the and I did like the title change. I mean, I would have thought it would have been fine as is, but I think it was clever to change it to Plus Red Cacas or Cac. Yeah, I think that's what, yeah, that's it, Cacas. And great imagery and metaphors all the way through. I like how you take us through, the day, a moment in the life of this guy who served his country He's putting up with his own shit. The bureaucracy of everything, or people just not caring. And of course, you know, they're worried about the little things, but it's, you know, as always, the little things add up. I did find that this had kind of a nice, to me, a nice touch of a bit of dark, twisted humor. Especially man walking his dog fails to curb his hound, tail wag is innocent, glance away is not honor bound. You know, you gotta pick it up. But I really like the ending too. And especially where you say, no doubt made in China, but that's a whole nother song. Light changes again and crosses on the red, limping from a combat wound that somehow escaped compensation of a grateful nation. More rat shit. You know, always more stuff to put up with. Definitely a strong and, like I said, biting right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I got to start with that first stanza. It gets the light rat eyes. Had me thinking of George Carlin, and it kind of fit really well. Rat shit, bat shit, dirty little twat, stick it in your mouth and tell me what you got. So, it fit the motif, but I didn't know if you had that intentionally, but it worked just as well. But this does hit on the idea of whether you live outside or you're just taking in the evening. There is that notation where no matter where you step, you always put your foot in some shit, and it's usually not your own. Just like you got the vengeful cat on your slippers. All of a sudden, you're barefoot and it's oozing between your toes. And even with the dried and crusty stuff on the outside, if you step in it, you might get a little hard crunch, but there's a nice, soft, chewy center that you just put your foot in also. But the idea that walks through this, that sort of the street cleaning, rather work at McDonald's, because that's less shit to take care of than actually taking care of. I mean, that kind of paints an ugly notion of those poor boys out in San Francisco. Yes, we have the map to where all the shit lies. Go out there and clean it all up. And it's not even doggy shit. It's human. So I like that bit of funny. But the back end, limping from a combat wound that somehow escaped compensation of a grateful nation, more rat shit, the implication being there, yeah, we can ship them off to fight in the shitholes around the world, yet they're never taken care of when they come home. Or they're hung out to dry, really.
Great observation. Oh, definitely. Great observation. And Lawrence, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, I all the posters appeal to me. As I said before, I'm a great fan of poster art. I think some of it is just absolutely clever. And this particular poster really reflected the period. The view of the Chinaman holding a rat up to his mouth. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, with an open mouth, it only says one thing. He's going to eat it. And that's the view of Chinaman, especially the way he's dressed. That is kind of racial, if you will. Think he's about to eat something that's pretty grotesque. To me, it was a kind of a dark feeling. Rats aren't meant to be very pleasant subject anyhow, and I was wondering how to legitimately interpret what I was seeing, and I said to myself, that's some nasty shit, and I said, all right, I'm going to go with that, so I did, thank you.
The
title, More Rat Shit, it got 87 views and not a breath of a like or a comment. I said, I got to change the title.
And sort of the posters, John Lennon wrote a song from an old 1890s poster that he came across, and the song was Mr. Kite, and it had a picture of someone flying a kite on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nice
that's
cat.
A little that's That is an interesting tidbit. So you just never know what a poster will inspire. That's very cool. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
You're On Your Bike by Stalina. I'm enjoying.
All right. If you want to be sure to make your date, not waste time and not be late, leave your horse tethered in the stable, make haste and as soon as you are able, go to Parkins, Wolverhampton, purchase a bike, then nevermore you'll have to hike, and arrive all sweaty for your miss when she turns her nose up at your kiss. She'll admire your impressive seat so smooth, then she'll subtly stroke your inner tube as it reflects, inflates with your smooth pump action, then gasp in awe at your great big klaxon. So pop into the shop, see what's inside, if you want your lassie to have a smooth ride. Sitting her snugly upon your huge handlebar, you and she will surely go far. On your bike, she will she say no more if you buy a cycle from St. Frankie's store and home. And just a little note here, when Selena saw this contest, she actually commented on the side of the contest, laugh out loud, I was born in Wolverhampton, my hometown. So I thought that was, and I didn't actually know that, and so I thought that was a funny coincidence there. And she had great fun, and she mentions in her AN that on your bike is a British expression which means do one or get lost. So I will comment further, but first I'll get comments from you gentlemen. So your thoughts, Laurent.
Can you come right back to me, please?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And Rex, your thoughts.
It's kind of funky, that first stanza. Tether up your horse in a stable, go down to Wolverhampton and buy a bike. Then nevermore you'll have to hike and arrive all sweaty for your miss when she turns her nose up at your kiss. Well, hell, if I'd rather take the horse than hike to begin with. So it was a nice way to stay on that angle. But the back end of this also hints at the impressivity of cycling, the two. The subtle strokes, you're in a
yes.
tube, and given place with your smooth pump action, then Gastonor at your great big klaxon. So pop into the shop, see what's inside, if you want your lassie to have a smooth ride. Sitting her snugly upon your huge handlebar, you and she will surely go far. Yes, that kind of reminds you of up the hill when Jack and Jill could fetch a pail of water. Jack came down with half a crown, and Jill came down with a daughter.
It does have that kind of tone and sense of humor to it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. And, Laurent, are you ready to comment?
Yes, I am. I was entranced with this because she takes the point of view of someone from a time period where the bicycle is all the rage all of a sudden. It's become a more sophisticated mode of transportation. Not that bicycles haven't existed for longer than that, but when they began becoming ubiquitous in terms of quality, I think everybody really liked them. And so I enjoyed that perspective of someone who would admire the seat so smooth. And all of a sudden, you know, she takes liberties with this. When she subtly strokes your inner tube as it inflates with these smooth pump actions, to use that whole backdrop and then let it become something sensual, I thought was very, very clever.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the allusions, the metaphors, the double entendres, you know, definitely very clever. You know, I like this all the way through. I thought that the first part was kind of like the in the voice of the, like, well, the whole thing's in the voice of a seller, but it's almost that more serious voice. And as you were mentioning, Lawrence, it's the voice of someone who lives in a time period where, you know, a new bike is all the rage. But I do particularly like the sense of humor in the second stanza, you know, with the, so pop into the shop, see what's inside. If you want your lassie to have a smooth ride, setting her snugly upon your huge handlebar, you and she will surely go far. And I learned a new phrase, on your bike. So very cool. Great writing, Selena. I'm glad you were inspired. And very well done. All right, next. What do we have next?
101 Delights by Eric Svensson, and you have a SoundCloud.
All right. Mosey on over there, and here we go.
101 Delights, pearls and pearl, myrrh of vehicles, Midas touch, Purdy of the Avengers, Pandas, Parlez-vous Francais, for queen and country, she's on a gambit singing over the mic, gentle shimmy shiver as winged spirit of ecstasy flies, tinted Rolls-Royce windows hide clandestine diplomatic shenanigans, steady steed John Caution, but Lumley derides all things glumly. Give us hope, Johanna, give us hope. Christine, diamond-encrusted winged spirit of ecstasy on bonnet flies. Emblem of chivalry gently shimmy shakes off minuscule dewdrops. Squeamish Cruella de Vil crinkles her nose. 101 yapping Dalmatian puppies yelp for help. Too close to the glen, all hope seems lost. No pearlescent purdy purr around to prevent the making of a Dalmatian fur. 101 delights of Arabian nights, Aladdin discovers a whole new will. Winged spirit of ecstasy panders to his adventurous spirit. Ensconced within rarefied, purified air, his silver falcon Rolls-Royce glides. Sweet chariot swings an adventurous sky high. Myrrh of vehicles panders to big dreamers. Turbaned Lawrence of Arabia winks. His soul is forever on the move with Deborah Winger's caravans. Spirit of ecstasy jet streams. Falcon astute blue eyes. Short clipped wings rush to save Lawrence from Arabian cutlasses. For king, queen, and country's sake, Rolls-Royce plays the highest stake. Waiting in the wings, Liberace's serene, Rolls-Royce showstopper vehicle purrs. Off behind the candelabra, in the garage, the status symbol slumbers, dreams of its next stage performance in Vegas. Jewel-encrusted steering wheel longs for strong gloved hands. Matt Damon's rendition of Scott Thorson made even the spirit of ecstasy angel blush. Hush, hush, Rolls-Royce isn't made for the faint-hearted. Pearlescent pearl, myrrh of vehicles, touché, Midas and Perms.
Great read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
There was a time when Rolls-Royce was the machine to have. Rolls-Royces from the 30s and 40s could last forever. They were iron beasts. When they were fixed, they stayed fixed. You could work on them, although they were complicated for the day. But it gradually became something else, something that required an enormous outlay of cash just to be able to drive and upkeep. And it lost, I thought, some of the charm evidenced by this wonderful poster that Eric chose. I'm very, very impressed by all the associations he was able to make, people and scenes with which Rolls-Royce is part and parcel. Anything from a movie by Disney with Cruella de Vil to The King to The Queen to Purdy the Avengers, which was a great English, I want to call it thriller. It had a wonderful coupling of a pair of crime fighters or detectives, very well done. To Aladdin, he references that winged spirit of ecstasy, the pristine diamond-encrusted winged spirit. Does such a good job of it. Mentions Lawrence of Arabia, also associated with Rolls-Royce. And all the way through, and does such a great job of bringing to life the storied history of Rolls-Royce. And it is a vehicle that is not meant for the faint-hearted. I'm so touched by his phrasing at the end, myrrh of vehicles. That is nice.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. Yeah, he did do a wonderful job of taking us through so much of the history of Rolls-Royce with his line choices. So, very cool comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, he started and ended on the same note. Pearlescent per Murrah vehicles, Midas touch, and finished out with pearlescent per Murrah of vehicles, touche Midas, offering that note to the golden not just the golden era, but the golden perfection when it came to autos. And he drops in a wealth of goodies. Purdy of the Avengers, Panda's Parley, Rue Francais, for Queen and Country, she's on a gambit, singing over the mic. Purdy was the girl in the new adventures of the new Avengers. Gently Shimmy Shivers, Winged Spirit of Ecstasy Flies. The spirit of ecstasy is the Rolls' hood ornament. Then she rolls into the sort of a steady steed John Caution, but Lumley derides all things glumly. Give us hope, Joanna, give us hope. John Steed was the main title character. Lumley was Purdy, and her first name was Joanna. So nice touch in bringing that all to a head. Then he drops in the spirit of ecstasy on Bonnet Flies, Bonnet being the hood in the English role. And that sort of squeamish Cruella de Vil crinkles her nose on it, one yapping Dalmatian puppies yelp for help. Too close to the Glen, all hope seems lost. Again, a fine note there. Glenn Close played Cruella de Vil in the movie. And then no pearlescent Purdy purr around to prevent the making of Dalmatian fur. A nice drop there, not having the Avengers in there to beat the hell out of Cruella. And as Laurent said, that nice touch there with the Arabian Nights, Aladdin, and dropping in Lawrence of Arabia as well, rolling in that very same thought. And Turban, Turban Lawrence of Arabia, Wings His Soul, is forever on the move with. And then drops in Deborah Wing's Caravan. I don't remember that allusion, but I'll look it up just to figure it out. And then that's all for queen, for king, queen, and country's sake, Rosewife plays the highest stake. Again, allusion to the Bond and the Avenger-esque escapades getting into. And hush, hush, the royal, the Rolls-Royce isn't made for the faint-hearted, and is right on that one, too. Nicely done, Eric. That's loaded.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, great comments. You know, I really like how this, it's like watching a Rolls-Royce parade. I mean, just one thing after another going down the row, you know, just moving along so beautifully and such clever phrasing, you know, so it's such a cultural icon and so many great cultural and social references throughout. You know, I like the title even with the 101 Delights. He just really brings us alive, like it is a parade. And I like it all the way through. I particularly like Waiting in the Wings, Liberace Serene, Rolls-Royce Showstopper, Vehicle Purrs Off Behind the Candle Bra in the Garage, The Status Symbol Slumbers, Dreams of Its Next Stage Performance to Vegas. You know, the idea of the Rolls-Royce once being, as was mentioned, such a status symbol, such an important part of, you know, the golden era of society. But I also like that those three lines, Pearlescent Pearl, Myrrh Vehicles, Touche Midas. Wonderful lines all the way through, clever references, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
The Family Singer Sewing Machine by Seaglass, Matt and Jules.
All right. The Family Singer Sewing Machine by Seaglass. In the back of the shed for 50-odd years and covered in dust, a table with a treadle and wheel. We drag and lift it into the house, raise the lid, and find a perfect hand-painted Singer sewing machine circa 1925. No electric required, just a little lubricant, and two hands and feet quietly sewed new covers for the sofa, mended my skirt, made a dress for a doll, and no cooperative energy involved, just my own. And the sound of the treadle took me back in time to a slower, more quiet world, and my white-collared yellow dress for Easter Sunday, sewn on this machine by Grandma, who learned to mend and make do during World War II, a concept beyond the ken of modern landfill humans. End poem. Oh, man, I gotta say, I really love this, right? It's just beautiful, and it's nostalgia, and it's her tribute to her Grandma. But I'll comment more, but first of all, your thoughts, Rex.
It reminds me of a couple of things. Now, these old Singer sewing machines were solid metal pieces. I mean, it was a nice heavy machine, and it was hand and foot powered. So you pedaled to get the needle going up and down, and you watched the spindle go, and you guided the cloth through the machine, so you got a straight line or whatever bit of sewing you were doing. The thought of, and it also being something quiet, you could actually hear yourself think while you're doing the work you're offering up. But also hits on that note, and the sound of the treadle took me back in time to a slower, more quiet world. And my white-collared yellow dress for Easter Sunday, sewn on this machine by Grandma, who learned to mend and make do during World War II. And that had me thinking of, during World War II in Britain, a German fighter plane got shot down. He parachuted. The local townspeople, they all had their own war warden. He was one responsible for getting the people to go to the air raid shelters and responsible for rounding up anyone that wasn't supposed to be there. So he got the crowd together, and they captured the German. And meanwhile, the women got busy because all parachutes were confiscated because the silk was hard to come by. It was confiscated for the Home Office. Well, the ladies got busy, stole the parachute so they could make some shirts and some skirts and some dresses for the girls, because hardship being, they weren't getting any clothes, and that parachute provided them with a lot of cloth that was sorely needed in the home.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. I've never heard that before. I did remember reading somewhere that they used to, the company that made flour started making their flour bags in print because they found out people were using it to make clothes for their kids. But that is,
yeah,
yeah, great observation.
Kind of that cloth, but you did what you did. You did what you had to do.
Yep, exactly. It was definitely a less wasteful time, that is for sure. And, Lauren, your thoughts? Oh.
Did Lauren leave?
No, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Fine.
Very impressive piece by Seaglass. I got to echo everything that you said, Rex. We seem to have taken the human kind of out of the loop with modern machines, which simply say, you know, insert here and press this button, and the machine will select the stitch and do what it is you want to do. Just guide me a little bit. All of a sudden, you know, what she says, it resonates with me. No electric required, just a little lubricant, and two hands and feet quietly sewed new covers for the sofa. I think everybody's got an old sewing machine somewhere down in the basement. And the ones that are hand-operated, pedal-operated, are a real find, because, as Rex said, they're made to last. Those damn things, they're a little oil, and they will work perfectly, which is something, unfortunately, that doesn't happen in, what did she say, a concept beyond the ken of a modern landfill human. Yeah, the great disposal society, where everything gets thrown out. You find an old machine, an old typewriter, for instance, it still works. You treasure that beast. Because when the zombie apocalypse happens, you got to have that stuff.
Yeah, right? That is so true. Yep. That's a great comment there, Lawrence. And I'd like to welcome Wayne Gent to the show. Welcome, Wayne. Glad you could be here.
Nice to be here.
Hey, Wayne.
All right, Rick.
Did you get a chance to read Seaglass's poem?
Myself?
Seaglass's poem? Did you get a chance to read it?
Yes, I read it. I was here when we read it, and it's a great poem. My mom used to have a sewing machine like that. When you had the feet pedals on, you pet it, she pedal, and she's pretty good rocking back and forth and doing it. So she liked to do quilts and stuff. Now, this poem was an excellent poem about a lot of nostalgia in it and a great flow. And it's a nice poem all the way through, and I enjoyed it. Good job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is definitely a nostalgic write. A great tribute to her grandmother and of the times, and has been mentioned the idea of a times that you were less wasteful, you used what you had, and and I really like this. I really felt like there's a lot of heart in this, and I, you know, could relate to it because it makes me think of the sewing machine my grandmother had, and she even had things like she had a potter's wheel, she had a I'm blanking out what they're called, but people used them for yarn, a spinning wheel. She had a spinning wheel. She was definitely a collector of interesting objects, that's for sure. Yeah, I like how, you know, Seaglass writes on the idea of no electricity required, just a little lubricant and two hands and feet, quietly sewed new covers for the sofa, mended my skirt, made a dress for a doll, and no co-op energy involved, just my own, and the sound of the treadle took me back in time. I really like that because the sound of the treadle is such a, you know, meditative sound. And beautifully written and very well done. And all right, Rex, what do you have for us next?
A soap say a season. When you take your bonny horns oot of the basin, my sweet lassie, your een will be muckle tae and aback. With a boon Scotland soap, hey been tay a softened. Horns off times may a use tay naught bit water. And boom.
Man, that was so short I didn't have time to grab the link.
I was wondering.
I put the link up, didn't I? Oh, no, I didn't, dummy.
All right. But that was a great read there, Rex. Loved the Gaelic there that you had going on. Let's go ahead and grab the link. So, and I'll comment first, which will give, you did an awesome read there, Rex. And here you go. I got it. You definitely, you know, I think it was a great choice when Kate said, can we make Rex do this? And I was like, yes, we can. this was such a fun little fun brevity by Kate. I like that she decided to put it in the, I don't know, do you call it Gaelic or do you call it something? But anyways, in the dialect of the Gaelic Scots dialect. And, it was nice of her to put the translation in the poem, in the AN, but I really liked that you chose, Rex, to read it in its original form. And, you know, just great delight all the way through. I did particularly, I like that she took the tone of someone selling the soap, like a door-to-door soap salesman. And my favorite line was, "My sweet lassie, your een will be a muckle tan a bach." And great lines and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Oh, I love this kind of poster. I love the vernacular. When you take your bonny horns oot the basin, it's delightful. It rolls off the tongue. And, the translation is there. I'm not going to get into it, but it's so much fun to read, so much fun to see the evolution of Scottish English into English into American English. And I just think there's something there that we miss when we write and when we speak. And the Scotland soap comes from Lucerne in Switzerland, with an advertisement partly in French. Fascinating.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, you got to wonder what that soap was made out of. Probably like sheep fat or something. And
strip away the mystery and the romance, why don't you?
Sheep fat...
They save the leftover maggots to make this stuff.
Oh, too funny. And Wayne, your thoughts?
I thought this was wonderful. I like the vocabulary they used. I had to use the cheater notes to understand what they're talking about, and it's very interesting. And I like the line where it says, "Hans off times mar, use tay not sit water." That was about what I mean with the notes. But it's a great straight. I loved it, and it's very entertaining. Great job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Rex Mawilati, you did a fine read of us.
Nice job.
You see, they got to take the bottom of the poster, get rid of that sort of Scotland spoke, extend the poster, and put this in as part of the advertisement to what it does to your hands.
Right, right, exactly, exactly. Yep, great comment. All right, and what do we have next, Rex?
The One to Toast by Wayne Jack.
All right, how are you doing tonight? It's I did the one by the champagne bottle, the champagne, and I called it One to Toast. It goes like this. Attending a gathering or formal dance, especially the pig of spirits, is still in France. There is no better quality one can obtain than upper class drink known as champagne. With natural sweetness and bubbles galore, after a couple sips, the guests will desire more. Best served chilled in designer-shaped glass, singles when drank, intoxicating comes fast. Most bottles are expensive, but taste is so elegant. May I suggest serving the cold of the world acclaimed Ornette? Going high in the mountains, sweeter than the rest. One look at the bottle and you see grapes on the breast. When the cork is popped and champagne flows, guests will be happy and soon find anything goes. You will be admired because the more Ornette you chose, and the guests will end up removing their clothes. Ian?
Great read and write, Wayne. I'm really glad you were inspired. I saw that picture and I thought it'll be interesting to see what kind of what somebody comes up with for this one, because it is just such a crazy piece of poster art. I actually wrote to this one myself, not for this show, but a couple years back for something else. And Rex, your thoughts?
Reminds me, I like the picture. That's gorgeous. And those two little nubbies that look like corks are covering up the, yes, come inside our bottle. You will enjoy what's here as well as the label that you see. And it's on that note of especially dropping in France and then champagne. And you got to think of the one-eyed monk who first used the cork in bottling wine and champagne, what's one Dom Perignon. So this works on the whole idea of, you see the bottle, see grapes on the bed. Oh, is those grapes? Well, they could be. But it's a nice advertisement for that that picture itself. I like it.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I have to agree. Great comment. And your thoughts, Laurent?
Anyone who writes a poem that rhymes, I always look for the meter and the rhythm. And I have to say that I find this exemplary in that viewpoint. If attending a gathering or formal dance, it's best to pick up spirits skilled in France. There's no better quality one can obtain than the upper-class drink known as champagne. To me, it just reads perfectly. It's measured, and there's a certain wit to it. There's a certain charm to it. I like the language. It's well chosen. And of course, who can resist going high in the mountains sweeter than the rest? One look at the bottle to see grapes on the breast is, well, come on. That's very cute. Very well done. Nice poem, Wayne. I like it.
Thank you, Art. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Great comment. And what a delightful write. Great rhyme and flow. Wonderful imagery. I like how you have this in such a way as making some clever and fun selling points to the wine. And I really like it all the way through, but it is definitely those last two stanzas that really speak to me. Grown high in the mountain, sweeter than the rest. One look at the bottle to see grapes on the breast. When the cork is popped and the champagne flows, guests will be happy and soon find anything goes. And of course, the ending line. And the guests will end up removing their clothes. I think if, you know, that can definitely be a good selling point for champagne, especially if you're serving it at a swingers club. So, you know. Great, great, right, Wayne. I'm glad you were inspired.
Appreciate it.
All right. And what do we got next, Rex?
221 by St. J. And that be for Laurent.
All right. 221. What mystery that lies in the soul of illumination? He is clothed with bygone stars and a planetary nation, an enigma hidden well in the cosmic land of hope, and a puzzling wonder that would put the mind in scope. 21 years. That's what I'm hoping I will make. 21 weeks, and my new fire burned away. 21 days, I cleanse my heart, I clear my soul. 21 hours, enough time before tomorrow. Like spirits rising from the sand, so a new man is woken. He grasps. He grabs his past's hand, for all that his bones are broken. Indoctrination fades away, thus his psyche, it's his token, and a roar of a beast for so to live the words he's spoken. 21 shots, and so my time is now approaching. 21 blunts, I'm so lost I get to smoking. 21 tears, so I can do it all again someday. 21 flames, all now, all my burdens burned away. Like amnesia in the head, do you forget or just repress it? He wants to start again because in this world he just don't fit. On the path to nowhere, since the day the blunt went lit, lost deep in the stars, but that thing he just won't admit. 1022, in the beginning of the dawn. 1211, if I don't make it and pass on. 1122, and a new world for us is woven. 0221, and now he must anoint his chosen. Like the pillars of a palace, so he will stay by your side, for he's waiting on the day that the moon and sun collide. If you gazed into his eye, you should have let go of your pride on the day that he chose you and had put his soul aside. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent. And what a beautiful and intriguing write with the use of numbers. You know, I'm not sure if 221 is his birth date. I do know that there are certain meanings to different numbers, so I'm not really sure that about 221, but you know, just a real spiritual feel to it, especially in that end stanza, like the pillars of a palace, so he will stay by your side, for he's waiting on the day and the moon and sun collide. If you gaze into his eye, you should have let go of your pride on the day that he chose you and put his soul aside. Beautifully written, thought-provoking, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. This kind of works in stages from that opening thought. While mystery lies in the soul of illumination, he is clothed with bygone stars and a planetary nation, an enigma hidden well in the cosmic land of hope, and a puzzling wonder that would put the mind in its scope. And then the offering note of 21 years, that's what I'm hoping I will make. 21 weeks, and my new fire burned away. 21 days, I cleanse my heart, I clear my soul. 21 hours, enough time before tomorrow. The 21 in that note hits on the idea of 21, you can officially call yourself a man or a woman, adult son. 21 weeks, I'm not quite sure, but 21 days, I cleanse my heart, I clear my soul. It kind of hits on the idea of abstinence in the moment. In order to cleanse your heart and your soul, you stay away from everything out in the middle of nowhere, so to speak. 21 hours, enough time before tomorrow. That hints at the new day that we're doing, this hope right there. And then the next one rolls into the new man is awoken. It's come out of that that soul searching, that that sort of maybe a spirit seeking in the moment. The 21 shots on so my time is now approaching. 21 blunts if I'm so lucky I get to smoking. 21 tears so I can do it all again someday. 21 flames all now, all my burdens burned away. And God wrote 21 sits. Shots hit the idea of drinking, the 21 blunts, of course, smoking, the 21 tears, the tears you shed for yourself, the 21 flames, all those burdens burned away. And that next one kind of rolls into maybe falling away from that spirituality. And then the next one down, the number 1022, the beginning of dawn, there's a new challenge awaiting, the 1211, the idea of if I don't make it and pass on, then the reversal of numbers is here, the kind of graduation of what is moving into next, that thought of, and now he must anoint his chosen. I get the idea right here, the last couple of stanzas, the walking of Christ on the cross, so to speak.
Wow, those are, I have to say, really great observations there, Rex. I really like the way you delved into that poem. Very cool. And Lawrence, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, at this time of night, and after Rex did such a great job on his comment and made much better use of his time than I will of mine, perhaps, I'm just going to yield the floor to him, but I will say this. There's enough mention of it in the poem, and I'm a little suspicious of St. J. I mean, in my day and age, you know, pass me a J. You're talking about pass me a joint. So I don't know how much that has to do with anything in this case, but there's enough mention of it within the poem that it's important to some degree and can be used to achieve a spiritual oneness like any drug, I guess. This is a poem about renewal that I really enjoyed.
I like that. Yeah, well, you know, it is completely possible that St. J was celebrating 420. So you never know. It's great observation.
Well, not in December he wasn't.
Hey, we celebrate it every day of the year. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, too funny. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was extremely entertaining. Had lots of imagination in the poem. It was a great read, Lawrence. You did a great job reading that. I love the rhyme in the poem. Had and I give Brother Stanza using the 21s and the other numbers worked well in this poem. I think he's saying that the end is coming soon and there'll be a rebirth of everything. It's all right, and good job with this poem. I enjoyed a whole lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Wonderful show tonight. Thank you, Rex, as always, for being a great co-host. Thank you, Lauren and Wayne, for calling in. Thank you to Hat, Darkened Auras, and I'm trying to remember if there was anybody else on the board, but thank you to the two of them and to anyone else who hung out on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Please make sure to keep an eye out on the topic boards and contests put out by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, all.
Good night, all.
Good night, guys.
Good night, Wayne.